What my new co-host is saying there is welcome back to Gap Books. In case you're wondering, the little voice you just heard is my 9-month-old daughter. She's the main reason the podcast took a bit of a break. But now Gap Books is back, and I have a great episode for you today, or at least I hope so. I'll be taking you to Madrid, Spain, to visit the oldest bookshop still in existence, Pergamo, and meet its new booksellers, Jorge and Pablo. This bookshop has quite a story that came very close to its end recently, when its owners decided it was time to retire after 50 years of selling books. Pergamo was just about to shut its doors forever when, like in a good book or a movie, it was rescued by a man who chooses to remain anonymous. He bought the bookshop of his childhood books and asked Jorge to be its new bookseller. I will let him tell you the rest of the story, but the main thing to remember here, I think, is that miracles do happen, especially in bookshops. Hello and welcome to Gap Books. Thank you both so much for being with me today on this brand new season of my podcast. So today we're going to talk about Pergamo, which is one of the oldest bookshops in Madrid, might be the oldest, you'll have to tell me, and also about your new careers as booksellers. But first I want to start with what came actually before Pergamo for both of you, what was there in your life. So Jorge, maybe I'll start with you. I'll start with you. Can you tell me a little bit about your life? I know you're a writer, also a journalist. What came before becoming a bookseller?
Well, I have a column, actually two columns in Spain's newspaper, El País. And 8 years ago, one of my sons and myself, we moved here to be closer to the headquarters. So I was doing a lot of stuff at the newspaper, and I began to publish my drawings also because I draw. So my columns are published with drawings, and that's basically what I do since I'm 6 years old. I read, I write, and I draw. Then I was actually tormented with the possibility of becoming a diplomat, which was actually my father's dream. And he was a diplomat. So I accepted a post as Mexican cultural attaché to the embassy here in Madrid. But unfortunately, I have never been prudent. And instead of remaining silent, I kept on writing my point of view. And I got in a lot of trouble with my own government. And so, for example, a year ago, a real mind job, a guy by the name of Marx Arriaga, declared in Mexico that if you read only as a form of leisure, it is a vice of the capitalist machinery. And wow. I said, no way. So I published an article that was entitled For Pleasure, where I stressed that a lot of people read in the bathroom, on a bus, and while you're lying down, and it's one of the biggest pleasures of life. So 24 hours after I published that, I was unemployed. And 6 or 7 months later, a guy called me. He had gotten my cell phone from one of my brothers in Mexico. At first, he said that if I wanted to meet with him at a cafe, because he had read one of my novels. I wasn't very in the mood, but I went there and I sat down. And then that's when he said, would you like to be a bookseller?
So this is the guy that took, well, that rescued Pergamo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The mysterious man whose name is not in any article.
Mexican.
Yeah.
At first, I thought he's probably a money launderer, or it's a joke, or this has some illegal stuff behind it. And no, once I confirmed he's an honest man, he's a lawyer, he's very discreet, he's half Spanish from Galicia. So I said, okay, let's do this. And then I took a crash course with ladies, the owners.
Yeah.
They were retiring. Actually, now they are officially retired. But first, I had a crash course in getting to know the ship.
Mm-hmm.
every day I would sit down at a desk and I have my notes, and they would correct my, not only my spelling, but also my handwriting. And it was pretty illustrating. Actually, I was willing to go along with the project because I had just met Pablo.
I was going to ask you actually how you two met.
Now I'm going to eat.
But what a great way to start your bookseller career, not to learn from these ladies that I know have been in business for about 50 years, taking over the bookshop from their father, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the booksellers that I interviewed so far told me they had zero experience when they started, which in some cases is a good thing in the bookselling world because it makes you a bit more creative. But I'm sure it really helps to have a crash course like you did. And so, Pablo, tell me a little bit about yourself. Have you always dreamt of becoming a bookseller, or did it just happen?
No, yeah, definitely. Well, I just graduated from sociology and international relations. That's where I met Jorge at the university. He was giving a course on Latin American literature and so on. Then later on, by chance, I ran into him in a coffee shop and we talked. And I think it was like a couple weeks just after he was fired. And well, we get along really well. And we talk a lot about books back then. And he proposed to me that I could work at the bookshop. And it has always been a dream of mine. Well, obviously, I love reading. And I have always had this thing. I didn't know if I want to go into something more political, like sociology, international relations, and so on. But I always love, as Jorge was saying, like reading just for pleasure. And when you study and you have to read a lot of things for university, it is sometimes hard to find time just to read for pleasure. Yes. So that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to, this library, having to read for pleasure and for job. And yeah, really looking forward to it. I think it's one of those dreams. Well, Madrid, there is actually a lot of bookshops, but it's really hard to find young people. I think mm-hmm. it's kind of like a close environment. So I was really, really lucky to run into this opportunity.
And can I ask you, Jorge, why did you ask Pablo to join you? What was it about him that you thought this guy's going to be a great bookseller?
I think it's, okay. If you believe in love at first sight, you also have to believe in friendship at first sight.
That's true.
And, well, you also have to believe in, not hatred, but at least unpleasantness at first sight.
That's easier to believe.
That's very easy. Well, you get on a bus, you see the person next to you, and say, I'm never going to talk to this person in my life. And intelligence stands out. And I'm getting pretty old, so I'm getting pretty good at it. And I discussed it with my sons on the day I met him. He was the only one who was actually paying real attention to what I was saying at the university. And he was the only one who asked me questions. And then when we ran into each other in the coffee shop, we were talking about books. And till today, anything he's recommended has been very, very good.
That's always a good sign. If hasn't failed with book recommendations.
He hasn't failed. I think I failed. I've recommended probably some pieces of garbage. But
not yet.
What I thought was the following. I talked it over with my kids. Pablo is on the verge of conquering the world. I mean, he can do what, and he's going to be an astronaut if he wants to be an astronaut. But seeing that he was prone to books as an object, a vehicle of thought and imagination, and he was in the midst of learning how to drive. And writing his dissertation. So I
said, two difficult things.
Yeah, but this is going to be a good opportunity for him. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to start from scratch. We had to get rid of around 4,000 books that were leftovers and send them back. Actually, the ladies in waiting, the owners, decided not to send them back to the publishers. They decided to sell it as trash. I didn't like that at all, but it was their decision. So we emptied the bookshop, Bergamo, and we're starting from scratch, from zero. We have 600 books that have arrived, But we're expecting in the following weeks to have another 5,000 books again.
Amazing. Yeah, it's actually hard to start a library, especially here in Spain in the summer. Like, we start working actually, I think, beginning of July, but most of the
distributors.
Are working with their own vacation. So
they take August off.
Well, right now in August, Madrid is
empty.
Yeah, we were just there, and I can confirm it was very empty, which is kind of nice. It's a nice change, but if you're trying to run a business, I guess it's not so easy. So you're starting from scratch when it comes to the books, right? So everything there will be new stuff that you've ordered now for the opening, or maybe almost everything. But the bookstore itself is obviously not new. And I read different versions of this online, whether it is the oldest bookstore in Madrid that still exists, or maybe one of the oldest. But anyway, it's pretty old. It's from the 40s.
It's the oldest because the bookshops that were older closed.
Exactly. So it's the oldest that still exists. Yeah. And luckily it won't close because it's now still it's standing, rescued.
And it's always been a bookshop. The father of the two ladies that inherited this bookstore to us was a guy who opened a bookshop, a bookstore, in a locale that had not been used. Mm-hmm. So it has always been a bookstore.
What it's meant to be.
Yes.
So can you walk me through it a bit? I did this with all the bookshops that we've been lucky to have on the podcast so far, kind of a virtual tour, because not everybody's going to get to Pergamo. Maybe people from very far away are going to listen to this. But seeing how you're both very good with words, maybe you can take us on a virtual word tour of the bookshop. As you walk in through the front door,
he's going to start the tour at the front door, and then I'll take over in the tiny room we have.
All right. So we changed a bit of how it was, but we have filled all the windows with books. So it looks beautiful at the moment. Pergamo sign is like this all kind of like
cursive, cursive writing. It has an old like 30s typography. Mm-hmm. It also states that we are also a papeleria. So we're going to sell stationery and probably pens. So once you cross the front door,
there's like the first time I walk into it, the thing that pops out first, like smell, because it's all full of cherry tree wooden huge and beautiful shelves,
which is his last name, by the way.
Yeah.
It was meant to be.
I think that's the reason Jorge called me. So
I think so.
Yeah.
To work with him.
Cerezo.
Good enough.
So I said, okay, Cerezo.
Yeah. It smells incredible. I cannot even describe it. I think I never smelled something like that because it's really hard to find wood like that. So you have two big tables that we are about to change and put some wheels into it so we can move them around and maybe have presentations and so
to
on.
Make a movable feast. That's interesting because the concept of an old bookshop in Mexico, in Spain, all over the world, actually, the reader would walk into a space and ask for a book, as if you were walking into a pharmacy. And the bookseller would get the book and bring it to you.
Yes.
We broke that. We interrupted that. We're going to go with the more modern concept of letting the reader walk around
and discover,
and grab the books.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's part of the pleasure of going to a bookshop. No, see what the chance encounter with a book.
The other thing is, I forgot to mention that also Pablo has, he has many merits that I caress, but he knows how to work a computer. So for the first time, there's a computer in Pergamo.
Is the first time that that's happened?
Yeah, because the owners, the ladies, used to use pen and pencil.
Oh,
and
wow.
And do everything by hand.
I don't mean this, to sound like I can't believe they did that. Obviously, when they started, that was the way to do it. But it's hard to imagine nowadays finding a business that is open that doesn't run with a digital database.
Instagram, and we have Twitter. And he's a very dynamic media maniac. And we have loudspeakers, so there's music embedded on.
That is always a nice touch in a bookshop.
That's also a nice touch. And we have very sophisticated delights. So we're not listening to Bad Bunny.
No. Very good. Next time I'm in Manila, I'll definitely come by. So you have the beautiful shelves, the tables. On the tables, will we find your recommendations, your kind of selection of books that you hope people will pick up and read?
Yeah.
So we were actually discussing it today. We're going to have three parts. So there's two tables. One of them is going to have new books and what's latest. And then the other one, we're going to divide it in two. One of the things about working in Bergamo and all this library is a community. So every day since we opened, well, we were there, we cannot sell books yet, but every day, at least four or five people walk in the shop and they ask us about, well, what's the future of the shop? Are you going to sell books? Is it going to be a cafe? What's going on with this? So that's really good because everybody gets super excited when we tell them we're going to keep the project. So that's really good. So having a community within the neighborhood that's really active and they buy a lot of books, and that's great. But we also want to have an online community. That's why we are being so far pretty active on social media, and it's going on, I think, pretty well so far.
A lot of people are crying when they walk in because they were children the first time they walked into Bergamo. A lot of students, especially two schools, Ramiro de Maestu and the Instituto Escuela, which were libertarian and very open-minded during the dictatorship here in Spain, they would find books in Bergamo that were not sold in all the bookstores. Mm-hmm. So that's quite enticing, and it really fuels us to know that we're still going to be the custodians of a very open space, a free space for free speech, right? And the young people who have visited us have this weird interest for what smells like old times, but has books that have been just recently published. And I'm getting into the second room. We have a very small room, like in all the bookstores in Spain 50 or 70 years ago. That small space was not open to the public. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Inferno. Hell.
Was it actually called that? Or?
Well, it was called like that by booksellers and distributors. Okay. That's where they kept the really, really good ones.
The good stuff was always in the back.
Prohibited. So, for example, any socialist or left-wing tendency books, you had to hide them. Right. And they would be hidden in the Inferno, right? So now probably we're going to make it a children's space.
Like a heaven.
Children's literature in there.
Yeah.
And we're going to let the kids burn in hell. And actually, children's books are very, very good sellers. Because a lot of the customers are grandparents. And when they have to babysit, fortunately, they buy books for their grandchildren. We have an office, but the office is going to remain as a very secluded space for when we do exercise, because we keep in shape.
Of course, it's important. The booksellers need to keep their shape as well. So that sounds really good. Next time I'm in Madrid, I'll definitely come by, especially to smell the shelves. Tell me a little bit more about the history of the bookshop, because I want to talk also about your plans and what you plan to keep and change. But I know it has a very interesting history. Some of it you've already mentioned, that it used to sell books that were not available anywhere else. Can you tell me a little bit more about that, how it started and then how it was passed on?
Actually, the owner, the father of the two ladies that I met, mm-hmm. was a lawyer. He was married to a very beautiful woman. And both were very good readers. As a lawyer, he had gotten not in trouble, really, but he had been signaled out by the dictatorship. Somebody pointed a finger towards him because he had expressed liberal points of views during the most acid fascist years of the Franco regime. He did get in trouble at least once because he was selling the philosophical dictionary that Voltaire wrote in France in the 18th century. That was particularly one of the books prohibited in Spain in the 20th century. A lot of bookstores used to sell, for example, the Mexican edition of Marxist thought. They would wrap it in brown paper, like a sandwich. Well, actually, I think the secret police already knew if you were carrying a square,
a very large sandwich.
A very large sandwich wrapped in brown paper, you were probably carrying Das Kapital. So you could get arrested. Now, this man, what he did was also exercised a sort of empathy and sympathy. The combination of guiding your customers with sincere appreciation. That means that sometimes when somebody wants to buy a book that's really a piece of crap, you tell them, don't find that.
How about this instead?
Exactly. Now that goes against all marketing laws, because he could have sold a whole lot of books, more than he sold, but he was a very bon vivant, a good man. He inherited this to his daughters, and one of them, Anna, I don't know if I told you this, she actually has a two-volume biography of Ferragamo.
Oh, wow.
She edited it herself, and they used to sell it there, but they took all the copies. So I want to get them back. I'm a very mischievous writer, so I'll probably build on that, probably to write my own story of Ferragamo.
As you should. I mean, the story continues, right? It's not the end. So
we're gonna be there.
You have to write the next chapter now.
After he's an astronaut, he can come back. And after I win the Olympics, because everybody knows I'm going to win the Olympics.
Obviously.
I will be back at Bergamo. Bergamo is now our base station. And we still have activities. I'm going to keep on teaching. He's going to keep on rolling. But it's going to be like an epicenter, because we also have friends who are starting to come to the bookstore as flies or bees or bats. There's going to be a lot of people surrounding us.
It's a new chapter for Ferragamo, right? One that sounds very exciting. It sounds like you're going to preserve some of the things that made it work for so many years before you came along. But I'm hearing that you'll also change or add some things, such as a website, perhaps, or a Twitter account, right? What else do you think you'll add to this bookshop that is already so beautiful? And when do you plan to open it again so that we can come visit?
Yeah. So, well, one of the things is we opened the second room, so we are looking forward to having more books and therefore more variety of books. So we want to sell poetry. We want to sell essay and, well, narrative as well. Also, one of the things we're looking forward to is having a reading club. As you can see, Jorge here is an eminence on that, and he knows a lot about literature. He has been with all the writers and so on. So if I wasn't Ferragamo's bookseller, I would definitely go to that. I mean, just being with him, it's an experience and you can learn a lot. And one of the things I was telling you before about having a community, I think a bookshop is about that, about meeting new people that share the same love about books. Books is not only about reading, but also about sharing afterwards, talking, sharing those books. And if you like something, share it with somebody and so on. So having Ferragamo, and as Jorge said, as a base, as a meeting point, I think that's something we're looking forward to. The reading clubs is one of the things, but also, as I was telling you, Jorge knows a lot of writers and famous people here in Spain. Mm-hmm. So having them come to Ferragamo, sign books, maybe if we figure out how to move the tables, having like presentations of certain books and so on, that's something that was never done in Ferragamo before. And
don't tell her about your ideas about like through Instagram, like a contest.
Yeah, we want to use social media, not just to like a marketing tool, but also as a way of communicating with people. Just this week, we will probably launch a couple stories about, well, what if you came to Bergamo, what are your top books that every bookshop should have, right? We want to have this, as I was telling you, the two tables are going to be new things, but also one thing is going to be like the topic of the month. So maybe Western Europe literature or short stories or novels that you can read in less than 2 hours or whatever, right? So having a topic that we can talk about in social media and having Jorge or having myself talking about it in Instagram and Twitter and so on. So people can come to Bergamo and in that table will find those books, but also having another piece of the table, readers of Bergamo coming and recommending certain books. So if you really like this book that nobody is talking about, you can come here. We'll ask for it, having a few copies, and you can maybe write down why you like it, why you recommend it, and have it there exposed. So as I would say, like sharing idea. And having a community around Bergamo. I don't know if I'm missing.
No. I was thinking about, well, it's obvious that we can invite authors so they can have book signing events that we can publicize. And we know a lot of people are going to go see famous writers just because you announce them. Mm-hmm. I was trying to devise a way, I don't know, probably we could do it once a month to have a writer the whole day with us, but not announcing.
He'll just be there.
He'll be reading and browsing in the morning. Then we invite him to lunch. And then in the afternoon, we come back and drink coffee in the bookstore. And whoever walks in will be lucky enough to see him in person.
That's a good idea, especially if you don't announce who it is and when it is. So there could always be somebody there.
Like a secret writer a month. That would be very cool. And we have lots of ideas that are going to flourish once we have wheels on those big, big tables because they're very heavy. They're very, very heavy. And as is, we cannot put a lot of people inside the bookshop. It's very small. It can grow because once we become millionaires, we're going to start buying all the buildings surrounding Bergamo. And it's going to be the biggest bookshop in the world. That's obvious. But until then, we can do short venues, small stints that will enhance the miracle of reading, which actually we haven't talked enough about the other part. Social media and communities are great, but we are solitary figures when we read. So the basic miracle is to, for example, witness that somebody is going to read for the first time Treasure Island. Wow. I envy that because I already read it, right? It's like the first time you eat a mango. I like to see the face of the person who's doing it because precisely he has never eaten a mango. And I want to see that face. So if we can do that on a daily basis, convince somebody, young or old, to read Borges or Faulkner or to go crazy with one of Hemingway's short stories, then we've done a very good job.
Absolutely. And then you can expand to the buildings around you. You said, I heard astronauts are paid very well. Yeah. So you should
become millionaires first. And then myself. So actually we're going to turn the whole city of Madrid. It's going to be one big bookshop.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good dream. Which bookshops are you going to be using as inspiration to achieve this? Because I imagine up to this point in your lives, you have been to many bookshops, not just in Spain. And if you had this idea of maybe one day I'll be a bookseller like I do, maybe you took mental notes in different bookshops and thought, oh, if I have my place, I'll do this or I won't do this. I have so many things that I actually started writing down a couple of years ago. What are some of your favorites that obviously you won't imitate them because it's impossible to really imitate a bookshop, but that you'll use as inspiration?
Yeah, here in Madrid, I have a few. Tony Machado is one of the greatest. Tipos Infames is good as well. You can drink wine there, which is really disappointing. Nice. There is one, I'm from Seville. I was born in Seville, and there is one bookshop I discovered, I think it was right before COVID. So I haven't been able to come back yet, and I don't remember the name, and I searched it and I couldn't find it. I kind of know where it is, but not precisely. So I cannot look it on Google Maps. But there's one bookshop in Seville, which I will find eventually, which it was a great inspiration because it was a lot about poetry, which I found a challenge.
A challenge.
Yeah.
Or challenging.
Yeah. And it's rare to find a bookshop specialized in poetry, I would guess, because it doesn't always have the appeal of novels and you know, new contemporary literature that people go for most of the time. So it's hard to make that profitable. So when you see a bookshop specializing in poetry, that's still open.
Yeah, definitely.
Quite something.
Same here. There's one in Madrid called Enclave, which is all about, well, mostly about essay and political essay and sociology. And that's wonderful as well. But I think that's...
Well, I have a long life of going to bookstores as if they were oasis or safe havens or refuge, and also as lifesavers. And right off, I always think about Hatchard's in London, in Paris, in Gallimard. I love those bookstores. In Washington, D.C., Politics and Prose is like my second home. In Mexico, not only the space, the spatial aspect of the bookstore, but the booksellers were like teachers to me. So they also guided my reading and they helped me become a writer, actually. And well, I have to say it, I was a big, big book robber. I used to steal a lot of books. I was very good at it. My library, my personal library, began with more than 1,000 copies of books I had stolen. But when I published my first book, a very wise man said, once you publish a book, you can never steal a book again. So I've been wasting a lot of my money, spending a lot of my money, investing a lot of my money in books for many, many years. Now, it's sad because I left in Mexico. I have 20,000 books in a warehouse. I dream of them. And here in Madrid, I began to buy new copies of books I already had. For example, in Alberti, it's a very cherished bookstore because they have bullet holes in the windows because they also suffered the dictatorship when very fierce right-wing fanatics passed by the windows shooting books. So I'm a homie of Alberti, also Machado. And I miss the old ones that have closed. I really miss them because I used to be a very good customer. Now, the good thing about bookstores in Spain and in France is that we have an only price, and that helps us a lot. This means that the customer pays exactly the same price for a book with us, if he goes to a big, big, big retail seller.
Even Amazon.
Exactly. So in a sense, we're going to turn Amazon into our client. It can be a bridge between people who want to order something immediately in English. The only way you can get it in 24 hours is Amazon. Okay, but it'll go through Bergo. Mm-hmm. As a writer, I also want to sell booklets and writing material.
And how about your own books? Do you want to sell your own books in your own bookshop?
We already have. Those have been selling like candy.
So because you said you no longer do this, but you used to steal books. If somebody came into Pergamo and stole one of your books, would you take it as a compliment or an insult?
Yeah.
And then you said that you start by stealing books and you end up by reading them.
Yeah.
And perhaps you end up a writer, you know?
Yeah, you never know.
Never know.
How many books are in your shop?
Right now, I think 543, last time I checked. There will be around 10,000.
What do you hope will be the first book you sell in your shop?
Actually, the first book that somebody asked the price for was Un Bosque Flotante, a novel that I wrote.
There you go. What would you do if you couldn't sell books anymore?
Wow. Now that really hit us like a brick. Well, I think we would continue being readers forever. We would sincerely lament if we didn't have the possibility to really build up on this project. But I consider that we don't have that in mind. We're going to do lots of things, but we're going to be booksellers forever.
What book are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Bomarco by Mujica Lainez.
Zero Gravity, Woody Allen's new short story collection. I'm reading it and I'm listening to him read it because I also have it on audio.
And my last question, what is your second favorite bookshop?
Mine is called Manuel de Falla. It's a really tiny bookshop in Cádiz, in Manuel de Falla Square. I used to go there in the summer and I'll drop by every time I can. Beautiful bookshop.
I'd say in Porto, Portugal, Leilo, where J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter.
So Pablo, I want to ask you something, perhaps inappropriate, but can I ask you how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 23.
So you're very young, obviously from a younger generation than, you know, the most of us, than me, than Jorge.
I'm 16, actually.
So this is a generation that people tend to make a lot of assumptions about. I have to admit, I don't have a lot of friends in their early 20s anymore. But I hear people talk about people in their 20s as if, oh, you know, so sad. They don't read anymore. They spend all their time online. And then the generations that come after that, the teenagers, we imagine are spending all their days on TikTok, or another generation that people like me or older would say, oh, poor things, you know, they just don't know anything about culture anymore. But talking to you, obviously, I realize that's not the case, or at least many young people do read and do have dreams such as becoming a bookseller and care about poetry and care about things that we care about. I guess what I want to ask you is, what role do you think bookshops can still play for your generation, for younger people, that it is true they're spending more time online, right? They can very easily order books on Amazon. Why do you think they'll still go to bookshops? Will they still go to bookshops? Why do you still go to one?
Well, yeah, definitely. I think a couple of things. First of all, when you actually look at the data, young people read, and from a like quantitative point, I actually think here in Europe, we even read more than our parents did at our age. If not, it's pretty close. And I think we read pretty well. I have used, for instance, social media a lot to encounter people that like same books, or I follow recommendations. And later on, what we have encountered has probably been, I met a lot of people at book presentations, for instance. A lot of people I already knew from social media, but we never encountered in person. And we met at bookshops, for instance. And then we go out for beers and so on. But our first encounter has been around books. And I think that's still a fundamental part of our society, like to encounter in places. And I think there is no place like a bookshop. Back in the days, when I was studying university, I just graduated, but when I was really stressed or whatever, I either go to the gym or I go to a bookshop and just walk around, look for new books. You don't have time to read and so on, but it's still a place to encounter and a place to refugee a little, right? And I think that's a really good part of bookshops, not only your relation with the place, but also relation with booksellers. And I think that's our challenge and kind of our role. And well, the greatest challenge for somebody who sells books, have a good relation with their clients and being able to recommend, because you're recommending a big thing. Recommend a book, it's not only like what you pay for it, but also the time you employ it. You're recommending something that somebody's going to take to the beach, for instance. And a couple woman came last week, we're going to go on vacations. What do you recommend us? That's an important thing. So yeah, I just think young people read, they read a lot, they read well, and we want to meet new people that read as well. We want to know new people, not only from our ages, but also from different ages, talk about books and share books and so on.
Great. That gives me a lot of hope to hear you say that. And I agree. I think it's a place where you go to meet people, you go to see. I would go to a bookshop when I was younger as well, just to see what's there, right? Just to see what I encounter. And there's not really any other kind of space like that, other than maybe a library, you know, yeah, where you go just to see what happens, just to see what you find, what experience you find. Because when you take home a book, that's an experience that you're going to have for hours, maybe years later, you're going to think about that book. No, so it's a different thing than going to a bar, than going to a, I don't know, whatever other kind of shop where you know what you're going to get, but this is kind of a discovery space. And I just cannot imagine any online experience that would be the equivalent of that, no matter how good virtual reality will get in the future, or God knows what technology. I just can't imagine that feeling of, you know, smelling the shelves, the books, and then walking around, seeing what you find, talking to a bookseller. I don't see how that could go away. So let's talk a little bit about books. It would be a waste to have you on this podcast and not ask you about what books you like, right? What do you read? So Jorge, you were mentioning that Pablo recommended some good books to you recently. Can you share some of these recommendations?
For example, I have never read a Chilean author called Pedro Lemebel, unfortunately deceased. And he has a wonderful novel, his only novel. It's entitled Tengo Miedo Torero. And it's a beautiful novel written in his own language, because he invents a lot of words like Joyce. And it's a love story, a beautiful love story, surrounding the days when a fistful of maniacs tried to kill General Pinochet in 1986. So that's a book I recommend, and I hope we can sell it. Now, he also recommended a masterpiece by Bud. What's his name? Bud?
I know how to pronounce it.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
This guy's the author of The Waterfront.
Uh-huh.
The Waterfront was a master novel that was filmed by Marlon Brando, and directed by Elia Kazan. Now, Elia Kazan was actually, he was a traitor, and he turned in a lot of writers and screenwriters, but Schulberg is the author of The Waterfront. Uh-huh. And Elia Kazan, although he won the Oscar, he was a snitch during the McCarthy years. And he accused a lot of his fellow workers of being communists. So the movie, like, is on the blacklist because of that. But nobody knows that Bud had also written another novel that's called The Disenchanted.
Mm-hmm.
And in Spanish, it's called El Desencantado.
El Desencanto.
I always forget. And it's out of print. So I've been trying to convince the publishing house, Acantilado, that they have to publish it, republish it, and we're going to sell as many copies as possible, because it's a great novel surrounding the last days in the life of F. Scott Fitzgerald. So if you haven't read it, read it.
I haven't read it. I'm putting it now on my list. So this one is about, it's a fictionalized version, right? Of Schulberg with F. Scott Fitzgerald.
But Schulberg met Fitzgerald, and he actually worked with Fitzgerald on a script. He knew that sooner or later he was going to have to write about the torment, the living hell that drove Fitzgerald to his death. And although it's very sad, it turns out to be a very contagious novel.
Mm.
You have to read it.
I have put it on my list. I will read it. I'm reading two other books at the moment. When I finish those, I'm starting with my list from the new season of this podcast.
You have to read my books.
I have to read your books. It's true. I have not read your books. I will not lie about it. There's no point to it. But
drop everything and read.
Which one should I read first?
The Empress of Lavapiés.
Okay.
We have a few copies.
We have got them all.
Is it Lavapiés, the Madrid neighborhood Lavapiés?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Then I will start with that.
Give me
maybe two more recommendations of books before we move on to another question.
All right. Yeah. I'll be brief. Since I met Jorge, I think I've only read or mostly read about Mexican literature and so on. So two recommendations that Jorge made to me. The first one is Recuerdos del Porvenir, which would be
Elena Garro.
Yeah, in English.
Remembrance of the Future.
Yeah.
No, The Remembrance of Things to Come.
That's
like a tribute to Proust. Remembrance of Things Past.
Mm. That's a masterpiece. People said
magical realism
started with her.
Started with that novel.
It's, I don't know. It's, I read it, I finished it a week ago or so on, and I'm still processing it. So it's a really, really good novel. It has both, I think it's like a really good mix of Mexico and its violence. So like you can find in Pedro Páramo and so on. And then you have the magical realism of Comala and Gabriel García Márquez. And it's, if you take those things and you put it together, and it's just amazing.
Well, nice. Sir.
And then my second recommendation, and that's actually the book I was reading when I met Jorge and for the second time, when I actually, we talked and so on. And it was Gringo Viejo by Carlos Fuentes. It's also, it's kind of like the Desencanto. It's a non-official biography. This time of
Ambrose Bierce,
when he crossed the border to Mexico.
Like an old gringo. that crossed the border like an old gringo.
And he went to Mexico to die. And another masterpiece. Yeah. Those two things. I think.
By the way, today would have been Carlos Fuentes' son's birthday.
Oh, Fuentes Lemos.
If he had not died. So here's to you, wherever you are.
These are great recommendations. I always ask for recommendations of books from all the booksellers. And it has happened that some of them have repeated recommendations, but these are completely new, brand new titles.
I'm going to sneak two other recommendations. Please. 84 Charing Cross Road by Helene Hanf is a beautiful book about a bookstore. In Spanish, it's called 84 Charing Cross Road. Helene Hanf was a writer from New York, a very gifted writer, Jewish, and she started sending orders to a bookstore in London called Marks and Company that was located on 84 Charing Cross Road. Unfortunately, there's a Burger King there now, but there is a sign that says, here stood the famous bookstore of Marks and Company. They made it a movie with Anthony Hopkins and Anne Bancroft. And it's a beautiful movie about a bookstore. And there's another very good novel about a bookstore that Coixet, Isabel Coixet directed as a movie called The Bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quaint little bookstore in Ireland, I believe. The movie is fantastic, but the novel is superb. So we had to mention books about bookstores. So
you had to.
There you have two.
I'll give you one back, a recommendation about a bookstore that I had the pleasure of interviewing in the last season. This is a bookseller from Egypt, from Cairo, and her bookshop is really interesting because it's gone through so many different political changes. They were there during revolution. So her name is Nadia Wassef, and her book is called Shelf Life, Chronicles of a Cairo Bookseller. And I really recommend it. I finished it just recently, and she's a really interesting person too, and you can listen to her episode as well. Great. Okay. We have book recommendations. We have everything, but I want to ask you, because the bookshop is not officially open yet, but it will be soon. And then once it's officially open, you will officially be booksellers, which to me, that is very exciting. I'm sure to you as well. And I want to ask you, have you already imagined how a day in your life as a bookseller will look like? What might be your daily routine?
Well, we've already gotten the knack of it. We have to be very punctual. Opening and closing. We have to be very kind. I say it for myself because Pablo is a very kind person, but I'm more like Fran Lebowitz. And I can't be rude to the people who walk into the bookstore. And I've been pretty pleasant till now.
You've kept it together.
So I won't become a Grinch. I also know that we have a lot of quietness. Because it will not always be visited. And I suppose we are going to have time to read and probably to write, because we're both writing stuff. We have stuff that we write. And we're looking forward for the children. We already have a very cute visitor. She's a Ukrainian refugee girl who's the daughter of the cleaning lady. And she hugs us and she shows us children's books. Oh. So she's guiding us in that sense. I think what we have in store for the future is a magnificent space for peace and creativity.
That's a beautiful note to end on, I think. So we'll definitely come visit. I'll definitely come visit your bookshop because I'll be in Madrid soon enough. Do you think you'll be open in September already?
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, so I'll come by September. Yeah. Perfect. So I'll definitely come. And for whoever's listening to this, they should come as well, of course. Any final words, anything you'd like to say to people who will or maybe will not visit your bookshop because they can't make it, but anything you'd like to add to our conversation today?
Since this is just audio, I'd like to tell the 64,000 people who are listening,
at least,
that if they visit us, they're also in for a big surprise. Because we are very handsome. We are actually very beautiful men and more than willing to help you become a more beautiful person. Now, to the people, the very few people who are not listening, I have nothing to say because they're not listening.
And there you go. On that note, thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk to me today. And I will see you very soon in Bergamo. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Got Books today. If this podcast brings you some joy, makes you feel closer to the world of books and bookshops, please share it with just one friend that you know will appreciate it. We'll be back soon with more bookseller conversations. Until then, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.